Welcome to Illumination by Modern Campus, the leading podcast focused on transformation and change in the higher education space. On today's episode, we speak with Pamela Wimbush, who is the Dean of the College of Continuing Education at California State University, Sacramento. Pamela and podcast host Amra Lawalia discuss the alignment required across departments to successfully launch and scale micro-credentials and the need for a cohesive lifelong learning ecosystem.
Pam Wimbush, welcome to the Illumination Podcast.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. I'm so excited to chat with you. And for the benefit of listeners, Pam and I have just been chatting for the last 5-10 minutes, and we might agree on a little too much here. So we run the risk of going off the rails, but we're not going to. So we are, we're together in Washington, D.C. We're at UPSIA ACRO's joint conference called Convergence. It's focused on micro-credentials, micro-credential policy. Pam, how have you found the conference so far?
Great. Amazing. Yeah. Dr. Wilson from Morgan State, the president of Morgan State University, the sessions, the roundtable that I've been in, also the session that I moderated, it's been wonderful. Mm-hmm. It has exceeded my expectations.
You know, before we get into this, I'm curious about your thoughts. And you've been in the continuing ed space for quite some time. You currently serve as the dean for the College of Continuing Education at Sac State. How important is the alignment between the registrar's office and continuing ed when it comes to scaling, launching, developing, managing micro-credential initiatives?
It is super important. It is one of the areas, just from being at this conference, and I knew that we needed to be a little bit more cohesive in what we're doing, but it is important. And I can't wait to get back and like, oh, I have all of these thoughts. And this is how we can work together. The comprehensive learner transcript is something that is necessary, especially for four-year universities. I don't think this is something that we have thought about for quite some time. I've worked at a community college where I implemented badges probably over 15 years ago. And I am a product of those stackable credentials at the university that I started at. So I think it is just important for the traditional learners and also for adult learners as well.
Yeah. Well, do you know what it strikes me about as I listen to folks chatting at this conference and look at the it, we're stepping slowly towards a cohesive lifelong learning ecosystem. Yes. And I think we've always thought about education through a few sort of tranches. We've thought about, you know, there's the work we do in the community. It's K-12 or community programming, and it's a little bit separate. And then there's the traditional student experience, and that's really where we're going to focus. And then there's the stuff adults do. And the fact of the matter is it can be the same individual over the course of 40, 50, 60, 70 years that's going to hit every single one of those stages. Mm-hmm. What I love about the shift towards micro-credentialing, the concept of the comprehensive learner record, all these pieces, is that it's really creating a cohesiveness in how we think about that. But the result is a very different institutional experience than what any of us really grew up with.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
I'm curious, as you think about, you know, obviously we're sitting here at a conference about micro-credentialing. Why is micro-credentialing creating the buzz that it has across the higher ed space?
I think it's creating a buzz because the enrollments, we know that there is an enrollment shift, clift. The enrollment trends are changing for our four-year institutions. And also, a lot of the states, they are changing their requirements for degree programs, for the requirements for staff to have degrees. This is a perfect opportunity for students to show that they are actually gaining skills, they're gaining education along the way, and it's something that employers can recognize. If a student stops out, for instance, they still have a takeaway that they can take with them. Whereas now, if you stop out for whatever reasons, what do you have to show for that? And there is a stigma attached to it.
Absolutely.
And it removes that stigma. So yes, I was in school. I had to stop out for whether it was family-related issues, whether it was health-related issues, but I still persevered. And in doing that, this is what I have to show for it. And so I myself have benefited from having a certificate that led to a degree. So I obtained a certificate in this, I obtained a certificate in this area, and as I obtained those certificates, it actually led to a degree.
There you go. Well, here's, I think this is, it's such an important point. I'd want to double down on it.
Mm-hmm.
Education is not a binary. You're not educated and then suddenly you're educated. It is a process.
Yes.
And the stackability creates visibility into that process. And to your point, only about 30% of students that I think that drop out of or stop out of an academic degree program do so because of academic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we doing to serve that audience, to serve our learners and create an experience? This is where I think micro-credentialing is bigger than a conversation about credentialing.
Yes.
It's really a conversation about the student experience.
Mm-hmm.
So one, actually, and I'm now going to bring us back to the thing we were talking about when we walked into the room, because it's about, you know, how the institution creates a welcoming environment, how the institution really presents itself to the learner, and then how the feeling that learner has once they engage. How important is it for... First, let's walk through, when you think about your role as a continuing ed leader and you think about the experience you're trying to create, how would you characterize the experience that the common CE unit tries to create for its students?
A welcoming, a belonging, a believing environment that you want them to believe in themselves. You want them to believe in the institution that they are researching, that we can meet you where you are,
mm-hmm.
that there is no stigma attached to it, that you can and you can succeed, and we have the services and the support here in order for you to succeed, that your family or your friends or your employer, that they believe that you are obtaining a quality education, whether it is a digital badge, whether it is a certificate program, whether it is a stackable program, that they believe in the quality that you're receiving. And I think that is so important.
Absolutely. And how do we start to bring that culture, that DNA, that mentality to the rest of the institution? Because that's, when we think about micro-credentialing, I think that experience is a component of it.
Yes. Well, I tend to say when asked a question about how do we do something, I say very gingerly, you know, because each area has its own culture.
Mm-hmm.
Faculty, they have their own culture within their respective discipline. And it's an educating experience. There is a course that I teach for UPSEA, and it is the role of the educator. How do we educate others in the work that we do? And so in doing so, we have to be sure that as PCO leaders, that we're educating ourselves, that we understand, we have a clear understanding of our why and who we are, so that we can articulate that to the stakeholders that we work with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when you think about that, the work of creating this cohesive environment, especially when it comes to credentialing, what are some of the most common gaps that you've seen when it comes to aligning programming and credentialing university-wide, both within the registrar's office and within other academic units?
I think it is a disconnect. We are in silos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, higher ed, for whatever reason, we customarily is siloed. We're not talking to each other. There is a lack of context provided for that understanding to take place of why this is important. And once we can remove those barriers that we place upon ourselves and the units that we serve, and in working with our stakeholders, we can go much further than we can by becoming stagnant, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that is one of the biggest gaps, is that lack of understanding of what it is. I'll tell you a short story. When I was first introducing digital badging to some faculty some odd years ago at another institution, we were presented with, we are not the scouts. We are not the scouts, and I didn't expect that. Yeah. Having been a Girl Scout myself, and my daughter was a Girl Scout, and I believe in the scout system, but that's what that was their first impression.
Yeah.
And so how do we remove that as though this is something that is really, it's something to help our students, help them, you know, be able to present the learning that they have acquired. And once we were able to do that, we were able to bring more people into the fold. And this was over 15 years ago.
Well, and I'd love for you to walk us through that process a little bit, maybe from that institution or through other processes that you've seen. I mean, there is a lasting and constant critique of non-degree programming and of alternative credential programming as it relates to the quality of that programming. There's really a disbelief in the rigor of assessment, in the rigor of the curriculum design. How do you tackle those misconceptions? Especially when, I mean, and I think for those of us in the continuing ed world, there's a perception that, you know, if the average student who's pursuing a non-degree credential or a continuing ed credential wants to apply it to the workforce, so the rigor and the intensity, the need to show ROI is immediate. So I think in continuing ed spaces is a recognition of the immediate usability of a credential. But how do you translate that back to colleagues in more of traditional academic side?
So I feel like we, within the PCO unit, it starts partly with our nomenclature that we're using. I was on a panel a couple of years ago where we talked about when you hear the word non-degree.
Yeah.
When you hear non-traditional, there is an automatic stigma that others feel that it's less than. And so how can we collectively identify nomenclature that is going to be more on the positive than a negative to outsiders? And that's something that we haven't figured out what that nomenclature should be. Also, when we align our outcomes with the curriculum, with the quality curriculum, and ensuring that there is an alignment and not misalignment to industry standards, I think then more will be more receptive. And when they can hear the success stories of students who have gone through having digital badges, not only students who have gone through it, but those who are already in the workforce, hey, I obtained this badge, and now my employer is recognizing me for that. I've actually received a promotion as a result of going through said program, and I have something to show for it. And so it's about educating. The more we educate, the more we share. Sometimes we're reluctant to share our success stories when this is a great opportunity to show the success and allowing our students to speak for us in the space as well.
Absolutely. So as a continuing ed leader then, actually, let's talk about this a little bit because I'm curious about what the first steps a CE leader should take in starting to build those connectivity points with the rest of the institution and especially when it comes to translating and reflecting learner success.
Yes. So it is about communicating and communication. And what does that communication look like? I can give you an example of what we do within my PCO unit. We are talking to deans about micro-credentials, about digital badging, and they are becoming more receptive to it because there is an understanding we have to do things differently. The landscape is changing, as Dr. Wilson has talked about. The landscape is changing. Sharing with my provost and our president what we can do to expand in this area. And not only that, sharing our success stories in our newsletters, having our students actually speak to their own successes. That's what we're starting to do in our PCO unit. Not only that, but also engaging with our sister campuses. We have a campus CSU Dominguez Hills. They're mm-hmm. actually here at the conference. They're doing amazing work in the digital badging space, learning from each other. And I think that is going to allow us to propel more in the space.
Absolutely. Creating something more than the sum of its
parts.
Yes, yes. Within the institution itself, what's the role the C division needs to play in partnering with faculties to create micro-credentials? Is it owning the taxonomy? Is it owning the infrastructure? How do you define that role?
I think it's that ownership. That is something that we provide for our faculty. We provide that level of support. So we want to make sure that we're not placing more on them that takes away from them actually with their curriculum and also engaging with their students in the manner that they would like to. Mm-hmm. But we're sharing with them, we have these processes in place for you to help you actually to do this and to do for us, not for them, but for us to do it well. So looking at it in a more collective and cohesive process.
What, to your mind, because you've been very active in the business and operations network within UPSIA, you're active as well within the enrollment marketing and enrollment management group, which, by the way, we'll see you in Portland.
Yes, thank you.
To your mind, what are some of the gaps between strategy and operations in the continuing ed space? Because I think so often that's where the rubber hits the road is in the details.
Yes, it is. I think for us, it may be, or collectively, it may be a lack of resources. Mm-hmm. You know, most of us, we're self-support entities. And so we have to be very cautious and careful when it comes to that. And having the right individuals in place, because we have a great and amazing team, they do a lot, but recognizing that just one more initiative, you know, while we're doing these other initiatives, and we want to do what we can so that there is no burnout and, you know, individuals can have work-life balance as 100%. Well. So that's also top of mind as we're innovating, understanding that we can't do everything at once, but seeing what the need is and still kind of talking and chewing gum at the same time, knowing that we may not get there as fast, but we are working towards that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm curious because that's a very good point. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all very cognizant, if not experiencing, the tendency toward burnout in our space. And there was, I think Inside Higher Ed published a study not that long ago, something like 30 to 40% of administrative staff in higher ed institutions were considering a career change. This is a scary, scary thought. How do you prioritize? Like how when it comes to five initiatives on the table at once, and I'm throwing out a number here.
Right.
How would you, what's the metric? What's the rubric that you use to determine where you're going to focus your time and energy?
So a lot of that is a collective thought process. Currently I am meeting with my associate dean, our associate dean, and we're meeting with the deans to say, hey, this has been, we thought this was a priority. We want to know what your priorities are, because that will help us be able to prioritize. When we're going through our strategic planning process, we don't want 15 things that are on our list. Currently, we were working with five goals, but we kind of have six. We're like pushing it a little bit. But these are goals that we know are important and that we need to move forward with. And when it comes to prioritizing, we have to make sure that we give space for creativity. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't, at any given time, we can receive a directive from above.
Right.
And you have to make space for that. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, then you start to feel like you're going nowhere fast. Yeah. And it's a journey for us. And we want to ensure that we complete the journey and that we are very intentional about the work that we do. And that's a word that I often use. What is the intent behind what we're doing? And who is associated with this priority? sometimes we set priorities for ourselves. When we look back on it, you know what? We can kind of push this down a little bit.
Right.
Because this is either a deadline or something that we set for ourselves. But for those where others, it impacts others, mm-hmm. it impacts our learners, then those are the ones who move forward to the top.
Absolutely. Well, Pam, I mean, that pretty much does it on my end. And I know you want to get back to
the... Oh, great. So, I can go on. So I'm enjoying this. Thank you.
Well, let me ask you, because this is the portion of the podcast where we pivot a little bit.
Okay.
Go from being a higher ed podcast to a food podcast. So if someone's going out to dinner in Sacramento, where do you think they need to go?
The Tower Cafe.
Okay.
Yes, I went there for the first time about 2 weeks ago. I've heard of it, but I never did. I hadn't had a chance to experience it. And it's an actual experience that I didn't, I actually went there for brunch, but they have dinner as well. The food is amazing. It is very eclectic. There is some history behind it. I'm told that we were the first Tower Records in Sacramento.
Cool.
And so it's no longer there, but the area where sure. it was. They also have a very nostalgic movie theater that is attached to it. And I thoroughly enjoyed, and they have loads of parking. So you're not have any parking. That's how I identify restaurants. Do that. What's the parking like? So it's like, so you will have no issues with parking.
That's awesome. Yes. Pam, it's been a pleasure. Hey, thank you so
much. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This podcast is made possible by a partnership between Modern Campus and The Evolution. The Modern Campus Engagement Platform powers solutions for non-traditional student management, web content management, catalog and curriculum management, student engagement and development, conversational text messaging, career pathways, and campus maps and virtual tours. The result? Innovative institutions can create learner-to-earner life cycle that engages modern learners for life, while providing modern administrators with the tools needed to streamline workflows and drive high efficiency. To learn more and to find out how to modernize your campus, visit moderncampus.com. That's moderncampus.com.